Welcome to Tiny House Tales, a podcast about the experiences of people who have joined the tiny house movement. I'm John Weisbarth.
And I'm Zach Giffen. Enjoy as we give listeners a behind-the-scenes glimpse into the absolute joys and inherent challenges of living tiny.
Together, we'll seek to unlock the successful strategies for minimalist living and learn more about how tiny living has made a big impact on people's lives.
Entertaining and informative, Tiny House Tales is mandatory listening for anyone who has ever dreamed of downsizing or has simply craved a more simple lifestyle.
Welcome to Tiny House Tales.
Nailed it.
All right, Zach, I know what you're thinking, buddy.
No, you don't. Okay, but go ahead.
No, I do.
What is it?
You want to say it on three? Let's say it at the same time. Okay, ready? One, two, three. My haircut looks good. Oh, you didn't say anything.
I'm sorry.
I got a haircut yesterday.
It looks great.
Which is the weirdest thing to talk about on a podcast. I get it.
Yeah, I mean, but you like to talk about my beard.
I feel good about
it. So we can at least talk about your hair, you know, and it does look good, John.
We're painting a picture. That's what I like to think that we're doing here. We're painting a picture of visuals with our sultry voices. That's what I think.
Well, for all the listeners out there, just so you know, John is looking particularly glowing today, you know, and I think typically I might say, okay, are you expecting or, but now I just know that it's wintertime and probably there's waves. So he probably went surfing this morning, which is why he wasn't available to talk, but like, it's okay, because that's a good trade-off, and you're glowing, so bring it, John.
I love that you glowing like I was pregnant. Whatever, that's fine. We can go down that road another time. Yes, I did go surfing. I know you were skiing yesterday, so you got to be feeling pretty good, which is good, because we have an awesome episode today, one that I'm very excited about, and one that I think, Zach, when we were talking about what this podcast could be, and what we were kind of thinking about it, I feel like today's guest hits the nail right on the head, because it really is about, we say Tiny House Tales, but about this journey to tiny, what it did for everyone or whoever did it, and like what the outcome of that has been.
Yeah, and all the learning that happens along the way, you know? And so I think when I was really thinking about, okay, the type of person that could really take us through that process and break down some of those lessons, I mean, Jenna was at the top of the list, so it's not an accident she's here, and we're very, very thankful. John, would you please welcome our guest?
Yes, Jenna Kozel, rhymes with Hozel, is our guest today. We're so excited to have her on here. Her journey to and through and with the tiny house movement has been extensive. She has documented basically the whole thing. Tiny House Giant Journey is where you can find her blog, her YouTube channel, her Instagram. And now we are so excited to have her on the show. Jenna, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so here's the thing. And it's funny because I was talking with Zach before this and reading your bio. The thing that jumped out to me the most, or just, I don't want to say the most, but one of the things that jumped out to me was how your story and Zach's story, maybe not the story, but the trajectory is pretty similar. Both early adopters to the tiny house movement, both got your houses and then took them on the road. A lot of traveling, really used that freedom to explore what your passion was. Got so excited about that. I've been banging the drum for the tiny house lifestyle. I mean, you hosted a TV show. You talk at tiny house festivals. There's so much there. And so I'm very excited about that. But I do want to start at the very beginning. And you talk about feeling trapped, working in a dead-end job, and just like in the rat race and not being happy. What was the job? What were you doing? Talk me through that very, very beginning of where you were in life that made you think, I got to do something different.
Yeah. So I was working out in Hollywood. My background is in filmmaking. So I went to film school. And of course, most people after film school try to make it out to Hollywood. So I was working at a studio. I was working at DreamWorks Studios. And I had a pretty good job, actually, what most people would consider in, you know, the industry to be a pretty good job. I was working in film development. I was going in and doing 60 hours a week, developing scripts. And I just didn't like it. And what really is terrible is when you spent years and years going to school, then working your way up to find out when you finally get this job that you've been trying to get that you don't enjoy it. And there's, you know, I still had 30 years, 40 years ahead of me of working to do. And it just was getting really depressing. And I also was never able to save enough money because even though I had a decent job, it wasn't very well paying. And my expenses were extremely high living in Los Angeles.
Jenna, you know what year that was?
2013 is when I first started thinking about quitting my job. So about 10 years ago. And I ended up quitting in 2014. And that's when I started building the tiny house that I still have today.
Well, I kind of discovered another parallel between our stories is that I think that, you know, back at about that time, I was definitely living in kind of ski communities and resort towns. And then, you know, you were also in Los Angeles. And I think of those places kind of as like canaries in the coal mine when it comes to the housing crisis, right? Like
yeah,
in these
absolutely.
Resort towns, housing has not been affordable for a long time. And I think, you know, the housing crisis in my mind, really the epicenter has been LA. And so it's not surprising.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very difficult to get a home there that's affordable. And especially when you're, as in my 20s and you know, in a bunch of student debt. So it's just not going to happen for me there, not for many years. And so I was looking for alternatives. And that's when I came across the tiny house movement. I definitely was inspired by your story. I think I saw it on Outdoor Research or something, or you were like sponsored by them, or I can't remember. But I remember the Outdoor Research house and you had a tap on the front for beer.
Oh, she knows it.
The spiral
staircase. Was that the
staircase.
Best part?
That was my favorite.
I don't know if the tap was the best part, but it was one of the highlights.
The spiral staircase is also something that I remember in particular. But yeah, I thought that was really cool and how you were traveling with it. I hadn't seen anyone really travel with a tiny house. And being a filmmaker, I thought, wow, what a great idea to do that and document that sort of, you know, adventure. And so that's what sort of the idea came from.
And Zach, that's kind of exactly what you were doing. You were making these little movies sponsored by your ski sponsor, OR, Outdoor Research. And yeah, living that lifestyle. And Jenna, that's so interesting because I was curious, having it been so early, like someone says they want to live in the tiny lifestyle now. I get it. It's everywhere. 2013, 2014, it was a very nascent movement that was kind of like, you know, in the pocket up in the Pacific Northwest. It wasn't, not a lot of people knew about it. So I was curious how you came to it. It's interesting that you stumbled across some of the content that Zach was making at the time.
Yeah.
And that kind of pointed you in that direction.
That and Jay Schaefer, I think a lot of people, I had read his story. I had never seen a tiny house though, before I started building one. So I think I was halfway through the build by the time I finally got to step inside of another person's tiny house, and I had to drive like 3 hours to do it. So it was really just kind of based off of things I saw on the internet at the time.
That's impressive commitment though.
Zach's grinning.
Well, I was kind of the same way, right? When I first built a tiny home, yeah, I'd never stepped in one. And like you, Jenna, I had been inspired by Jay Schaefer 100%. But like, to me, it was literally on the very first day when I like saw the very first tiny house. And it was just like the light bulb was like, oh, you're telling me this is legal? Like I can actually potentially do this, because it was just, I could see all the pieces just fit into place completely in terms of what I was looking for at that time in my life.
And by the way, the answer was no, it's not totally legal. But that was the funny part about what you just said. We're working on it. We're getting there.
Well,
more and more.
Yeah, back then it was like what I say is kind of a gray area, because legitimately I couldn't even gain information. You know, now I know what kind of questions to ask and who to ask them. But back then I just kind of went to the county and said, hey, I'm building a house. You want to inspect it? And they said, it's on wheels? No, that's the DNV. You know, does it have lights that work? Is it under the weight ratings? Is it under the size restrictions for the road? As long as it's check, 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 you are like good and good and just go ahead. And that's where it was.
Yeah, I didn't even have to bring mine anywhere. I mean, I got a license plate from the DMV just by calling them and telling them what it was. So I didn't even have to go in, you know, it was crazy. I just said it was a trailer with like a cabin built on top of it. And they were like, all right. And that was in LA.
Yeah.
So
I was in Colorado, definitely a little looser than California. So I would expect a little more stringency from them. But okay, so bring us back to that process. You went and you toured a tiny home and you said, okay, I'm like, you know, scared now, or I'm like relieved now.
At that time, I was halfway through my build. So I by the time I stepped inside one, I was already halfway through. So I did take a workshop with Tumbleweed after seeing Jay Schaefer's, you know. And so I went to Tumbleweed. I bought the plans. So my house is based off of a Tumbleweed plan. And I took a workshop, which later, after I finished my build, I started teaching those workshops around the country while I was traveling. So it's sort of like full circle there.
Well, your house is beautiful, by the way.
I'm going to say that.
I really love, I think it's just adorable. And I've always been a fan of Jay Schaefer's work. And if the listeners want to check it out, you really should. You should go check out Jenna's house because it does not look like the first house that somebody would build.
No, I had a lot of help. I did not have carpentry skills. I had a lot of friends and family, you know, so I learned a lot, but I definitely can't take credit for all of the work in it because I needed a lot of help along the way. It was very difficult. As you know, you've done many of them now.
But I always take credit for everything.
Well, you should. Yeah.
No, that's not true. That's what I do. I take all the credit. No, but Jenna, you know, what is it about you that, you know, you have spent basically most of your life chasing after this dream job. You get it. You're not happy in it. Most people just go, shucks, and they kind of slog through it. You say, nope, I'm going to quit that. And not only am I going to quit that, I'm going to take on this project of building a tiny house, moving into a tiny house. Like, what? Where does that come from? Because those are pretty big steps to take.
I guess I've always kind of put happiness first, you know? And so if I found that I wasn't happy in something, I'm lucky enough that I have the spirit that I'll pivot and change. I wasn't married at the time, didn't have kids. And so I didn't have a whole lot holding me down, just my student debt. And so, but the tiny house was so affordable. The way I looked at it is the amount I built it for was the same amount that I'd pay for 1 year's rent in Los Angeles. I decided to take a year off and do my big giant journey around the United States, make my documentary or document, you know, however I could, start my YouTube channel. And then if it didn't work out, I'd go back. And I had the contacts in Los Angeles and in the film industry that I could always go back, you know. I maybe wouldn't have the same exact job, but I could find another job. And so I knew that. It wasn't a huge risk like it would be for some other people, and I recognized that, you know. But what ended up happening is along the journey, my YouTube channel took off, HGTV reached out and started filming with me, and I got the job with Tumbleweed where I was teaching the workshops. And I just fell in love with the tiny house movement and all the people that I met in the tiny house movement and people living alternatively or nomadically. And so I think maybe even just a few months into the experience, I knew I was never actually going to go back. And now it's been about 10 years or 9 years, and I still am making that documentary, basically, or making short documentaries about people living tiny on YouTube. It ended up not being one film. It ended up being hundreds and hundreds of short documentary films that I produce and still continue to produce now.
A giant journey.
Yes.
Aptly named.
Yeah, it became that. That's for sure. I thought it would, but I didn't really realize how big it was going to get.
You know, you had mentioned something about the job that you knew you could come back to. Right. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's worth exploring that. What are the kind of components that create somebody's ability to be fearless enough to go through with a major life shift? Right. And I would 100% say in my experience, that was exactly what I knew, is that I had a job waiting in Colorado. It was such a feeling of confidence that I could go out and take risks. You know, and having, you know, I feel like I owe my buddy who kind of kept that position open for me a lot. Tall Paul Bauman. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, he was the earlier version of John. He's kind of like my older brother, just like John. That was a real superpower for me to be able to know that I could come back to a job and I could literally get out in the world and get to my last penny, you know, scrape back on a bus and just roll in. And that was kind of part of the same thing I wanted out of the tiny house, right? It's like I wanted that safety net in my life that I knew I could come back to and it would always be there. And it sounds to me like that was also maybe like the job was there, but the living expenses and everything else didn't make it all kind of work and make it work for your life. So I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on just like tiny homes as a tool, essentially, to escape those financial traps that leave people unable to kind of follow suit through with their dreams.
Yeah, I love that phrase, a tiny home is a tool. I would even say that any home should be a tool. I always think that if your home doesn't work for you, you shouldn't work for your home. It should work for you. It should be a stepping stone to help you achieve your dreams. It shouldn't be something that's holding you back from achieving something that you want to do. And I know that I think majority of people, at least in this country, end up finding themselves kind of tied down by their home, either the mortgage or the maintenance or the cleaning or whatever it is, you know? And so I think that a tiny home is unlike any other home because of that, because in most situations, it's affordable. It can move not every tiny home is on wheels, but mine was. So it can move with you if you need to relocate. It's just the ultimate flexibility. And like you said, it's the ultimate tool to achieving whatever it is that you want to achieve.
Yeah. I hate to kind of dwell too much on my own story. So I'm glad that felt a little too much like focusing on mine. I want to learn a little bit more about kind of where you are at that moment, because I know it's a piece that like blocks a lot of people. Like it's like, how do you do that transition? So tell me about when you first moved into the tiny house. You finally finished it, you know. What were the dynamics and the logistics of trying to live in it? And what was your first impressions and just kind of what worked and what was instantly not going to happen?
Well, I guess for me, it was like more of a moving all the time sort of lifestyle when I first moved into it. So what I had to learn right away was like moving it, finding parking, which is always a little difficult with a tiny house. But actually back then, I think it was easier than it is now in some ways. But logistically, it was, you know, sharing the space with somebody else because my partner was traveling with me at the time, finding a new spot for it almost every few days and routing out different locations, making sure that when we go underneath bridges, that we're not going to be taking off our chimney, you know, things like that. Changing a tire on a tiny house, that's a whole thing. But yeah, I mean, I never really had a moment where I thought this isn't going to work, I would say, because it took me a year to build up the tiny house. I had plenty of chances to be inside of it and to be like, all right, what works, what doesn't work, and to think about the layout and to really plan it out. It took me a year because I didn't have experience and because I had to pay for it as I went, you know? So it was a lot of weekends and a lot of thought went into it. So I didn't really have a whole lot of regret once I moved into it. It was such a relief to finally be done. I was so happy just to be inside of it, you know?
You know, it's interesting that one of the things that Zach would always talk about is, you know, building a normal house or a big house, it's like the guest bedroom on the second floor around the corner. Like, yeah, maybe the detail work doesn't have to be quite as good. In a tiny house, you talk about all the time you spent, everything is there on display. Right. And we always talk about, you know, that the house should be everything you need and nothing you don't. But the craftsmanship, you know, you mentioned the tap that was on Zach's house or the spiral staircase. What were some of the things? I mean, like, I love your little front porch, the log post mm-hmm. that you use. I mean, what were some of the touches that you were able to incorporate into your house that felt really personal and really cool and like really told your story?
I definitely tried to incorporate as much reclaimed items as possible. One, for financial reasons, but also I just liked the idea of trying to reuse as much as possible. So the siding on the tiny house is 100-year-old siding from a barn in the Midwest, which is where I'm originally from, where I grew up. I happened to find it in Los Angeles, but it was just kind of fun to have a piece of the Midwest on the tiny house. And I get a lot of comments on it still to this day. There's even some shotgun pellets in certain pieces that
awesome.
Kind of cool. Yeah, like we've been shot at as we're driving away or something. But also, one of my favorite pieces is there's this round window at the very front of the tiny house in like the storage loft. The trim on the inside of the round window is made from a juniper tree, and it's like a live edge, almost like a stump that was cut out to perfectly fit in that round window. And of course, I didn't know this at the time, but you know, years later, I had a daughter and I named her Juniper. And so now whenever I look at that, and my counters are also alligator, juniper, same tree. So I don't think I'll ever replace those, no matter how banged up they get, because to me, that's like special that a piece of something that happened 8 years later, you know, is representative of still my life and my story.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely try to explain how, you know, repurposing materials can bring in this joy and this appreciation for the product, you know, and it's like, you can explain that, but it's just really hard to kind of convey that sort of appreciation, I guess, in words, but talking about how, you know, this juniper wood that you used for your trim ended up kind of in some maybe non-conscious way influencing your decision on a name for your child. And then now how much more meaningful that is really, it's telling and beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, the tiny house to me feels like my first child in a way, you know, it was a big deal building it, and I don't think I'll ever be able to part with it, you know? So it'll be always very important to me in many different ways.
You know, one of the things you noticed when you talked about getting on the road and starting your journey was the people that you met and like the lifestyle, the nomads really that are out there in this country. And it's become a lot more prevalent. Van life really took off, and that's a real thing. Back when used to be living in a van down by the river was frowned upon. Now you're an influencer. But like, what was it about the people? And like, as you're going, and it reminds me of that song, the CCR song. And it's something about like rolling down the river. And like, you know, when you meet people that are kind of like-minded and doing this kind of thing, you find a home almost among these people. And I have to imagine who you were running into was vastly different than who you had been surrounded by in LA and in the movie industry. And I just wonder if you really picked up on that sort of the dichotomy between the two and what that was like for you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, LA is like the epicenter of materialism, and then tiny houses are like the exact opposite of that, you know? So yeah, I mean, everyone I met along the way was just inspiring to me, not only because of what they had achieved, but also we connected because of the challenges they were facing, the same challenges that, you know, everybody faces when they live nomadically or in a tiny house. There are certain things that are more difficult, you know, like where do you park? Finding clean water, doing laundry, you know, keeping your home organized and clean, and
finding a fax machine.
Yeah. What little things that you don't, how do you get mail on the road? You meet these people who have been doing it for years, and you learn a lot from them, and they've redone their spaces many, many times. And you take inspiration from that and find little things that I could incorporate into my lifestyle to make my life better. Finding that out from other people was really, really eye-opening for me. And knowing that they'd been doing it for such a long time gave me hope that I could continue to do it for a while.
Did it stoke your creativity? And not just like around the tiny house, but as you say, being a filmmaker or someone that aspired to do that, did that stoke your creativity?
I mean, absolutely. So like the videos that I was making and I still make were about other people more so than my own story, because I can show the inside of my tiny house a bunch of times, but eventually it's still just the same space. What's really interesting is to see other people who have the same square footage, but do something completely different, you know? And so I think tiny homes are really just like a mold of their owners, you know? People say, you know, your pet looks like an owner. Well, with a tiny house, it definitely looks like the owner. Otherwise, it just won't work. You know, it just, you won't last if it's not personalized and fit for you. I was definitely inspired to make videos about people, their spaces, you know, do tour videos And I have hundreds now that I've made. And every day still, I am making them and I see something new. And that's what blows my mind because I've been in hundreds of tiny homes and I've videoed hundreds of tiny homes and they're still coming up with new things, which is crazy.
I think that that is also the spirit of this podcast, right? Is that it, like, there's so much learning out there. And just like you said, everything is personalized, right? So what works for one person is totally not going to work for somebody else. So there's endless learning, I feel like, in these kind of stories of hearing about people's journeys. And, you know, within that space, I really would love for you to take us through, because like you moved in your tiny house, now you're bouncing around the country with your partner, you're meeting all these new people, getting inspired by all those kind of stories that you see in the different homes. And how quickly did you kind of come upon your template of producing videos about kind of the people you meet along the way? Was that kind of instant? And then we also have to ask, we got to get there, is like, can you tell
us? We'll get there. One question at a time, Zach. Okay. I know where you're going.
All right. All right. We'll get there.
The learning. I want you to teach us about being a television host, but first this question.
Yeah, I think it happened pretty quickly that I started making those videos about other people. And I found that they took off, you know, they became popular. And so when I saw that other people were interested in the same things I was interested in and interested in seeing more, that's, you know, what fueled me to continue and to keep making content like that. And so, yeah, I started doing videos like that right away on the journey, and it kind of became like a driving factor for me.
And that caught the eye of some TV executives at HGTV.
Yeah.
Who reached out. And here's my question. And I don't know actually anything about this story. And I'm actually this is the part I'm the most curious about.
Okay.
Is, it seems to me, based off of what your job was in development, reworking scripts, you talk about wanting to be a filmmaker. You sound like a storyteller.
Yeah.
Someone that wants to tell these stories and be a creator. But that's not necessarily the same thing as someone that wants to be in front of the camera doing this. So I'm curious, was that like, oh, no, I don't want to be on camera? Or were you like, yeah, finally, this is cool. You know, what was that like?
So I didn't really want to be on camera. I think...
Which I want to be on camera all the time. I'm always like, point the camera at me.
I'm definitely more a behind the scenes girl at heart. But I realized that telling the story, my story about building the tiny house, had to involve me. So I, you know, wrote my blog from first person, took pictures of myself doing the build. And then when I was doing the videos, of course, I was in the videos as well explaining it. And so, yeah, that caught the eye of HGTV, and they ended up following me around a little bit during that journey. So we did like 4 episodes, I think. And we kind of did a similar thing to what I was already doing. It's just with a film crew behind me, and toured other people who were living tiny and living in, you know, amazing spaces. And so, yeah, we did that for a little while as well. And it was a lot of fun, but definitely challenging for me to be on the other side of the camera. And but one good thing about it is I knew exactly what they wanted from me, you know, because I would be asking people to do that exact thing from the other side. So I think they liked me because I was super efficient. I was like, oh, I know what you're trying to get me to say. I'll say it. Here we go. You know? And so it was probably pretty easy, I think, to work with me in a way, or maybe not, because I knew what they wanted me to say in it. They were probably like, oh, she's trying to produce this as well. Anyway, it's kind of funny kind of going on the other side of the camera for me sometimes when I feel like I've spent so much time behind it. Yeah.
How did they first reach out? Was it an email? Was it, and how surprised were you? Like, did you think, oh, this is a total scam? This is not actually real people? Or did you believe it right away? I mean, I had definitely had my doubts.
Yeah, the first reach out was actually back when I was only building. I was the first episode of the, I was the pilot episode of Tiny House Big Living. So episode 1, you know, they didn't even know if they were going to make that show. And so they came out, they filmed me, then they pitched it, and then the show got picked up. So we were episode 101. And then after that, they came back to me after I started traveling with the tiny house and wanted to do a few spin-off episodes where I was, like I said, traveling around and seeing other people living tiny. So we did, yeah, 3 or 4 of those. It started right back at the very beginning, but the actual episode didn't come out until I was already, you know, traveling around.
Okay, so what year is this?
This was 2013/2014. Yeah, maybe 2014 when the episode came out.
Okay, and then did some more filming in 2014. I'm just trying to understand, because I'm like, okay, that's... Zach and I like to say that Tiny House Nation was the first Tiny House show. We were right around 2014 as well.
I believe Tiny House Nation reached out to me, but I was in already a contract with Tiny House Big Living. So I could have been one of your early episodes, and I would have loved Zach to come in and work on my tiny house. It would have been much better than what I ended up with. But yeah, I know that that happened. Like, literally, producers were reaching out to me about the same time. The Big Living just got to me earlier, and I had already signed.
This is fascinating for us, because we've never heard this side of the story.
I know.
Because I got hired in, what was it? It was March of...
It had to be 2014.
And it was 2014.
March of 2014.
I quit my job in February 2014. So it was around then, yeah.
Wow.
But I wasn't finished with the tiny house. I worked on it a little bit more after that. So yeah, it's right around the cusp of the same time as the beginning of that show.
Mm-hmm. That's so great. I love it. Okay, so, but you came from the movie world. Here's my question. Did you think... Now that there was a crew following you around, were you like, oh, wow, this is pretty fancy? Or were you like, wow, this is pretty ghetto. Like, this is not as fancy as I would have thought.
No, I worked in reality television before I worked at DreamWorks. So I knew that, you know, it was like a 3 or 4 man crew, you know, sound guy, 2 camera people, producer. I was used to it. I knew. And that's why I said earlier, like, I knew what they wanted me to say because I was that person.
They didn't need any other producers because they had you.
Which is
exactly. I hope you got credit.
Not what you want out of the person that you're filming. Hopefully I helped them out and was easygoing enough. So they asked me back, so they must have liked me.
So how was that experience?
It was tough being in front of the camera. Yeah, like I said, I don't love being in front of the camera, but I can get used to it. I wanted to do the show because I wanted to show what somebody could do with a tiny house, you know? And so I was excited about doing the show. And then I loved my crew. I got to be really good friends with the producer. And so it was really fun making follow-up episodes because she was always there as well.
Yeah, we had our director of photography, this guy Gavin Brennan, on talking about it. And it was like, I don't know if this show is listenable at all, but we were just like, oh, and remember this time in like Tulsa? And oh, yeah, what about this? You know, we were like, really, you do like bond with these people. And it's really cool that, you know, we're still friends to this day, all these years later, just as you are as well. Something struck me about what you were saying as you were talking about this experience, that you don't love being on camera, but you wanted to tell this story. And it's very similar to what Zach had said to me at the very, very beginning, because I was totally new to the tiny house movement. I learned on the job really early. Zach kind of pulled me aside, actually before we even started filming. And he was like, look, we need you, John, the like everyman, to kind of like spread this a little bit. It's like, I'm the dirtbag, you know, tiny house guy preaching to the choir. But he's like, I think... And he would say this, and I looked at him like, you're crazy. He's like, I think tiny houses can save the world. And I was like, well, you're an idiot, but okay. Now I'm like, oh, I get it. And I love that you both, you and Zach, really have come at this tiny house movement as, gosh, I don't know, true believers or really beating the drum for it. You really understood what it is, what it did for you, and what it can do for other people. And I just love that message. And I love that you've continued to spread that message in all the work that you are creating now and your different social media things. I just think, I don't know if there's a question there, but I find that admirable. And I think that's really cool that you guys both have continued to do that.
Yeah, I maybe didn't say it eloquently before, but I think you did a good job of that. That's what you're here for, right? You're the one who can like sum us up in a instant. Yeah, that is really why I wanted to do
this
show.
I've always said it's a good thing that I can cut wood.
Yeah, right? It's a good thing I can use a film camera because, usually I'm behind it. Yeah, I think that is really why I did the show. You're right, is because I wanted people to see the story and be inspired by it. And so even if that meant I had to be a little uncomfortable, you know, sacrifice some of my time and travel with a crew for a while, I felt like it was important. And when you find a story, at least for me, if I find a story that I think is that important, I'd be willing to do a lot to share it.
I feel that, you know, one thing that to me, we kind of share a certain dynamic in that we really had a very positive experience of moving into the tiny home and just kind of that, at least for me, it was such this kind of light bulb thing of like, why don't more people have this option? You know, and then getting into it and finding out more about kind of the legal hurdles that people and just the categorizations of where a tiny home falls in the different states and different codes that you can build it to. I mean, it's just such a mess. But the bottom line is, to me, it's like, why don't other people have this option? Because everybody looks at a tiny home and thinks about, at least this is the first reaction for most people, is they look at it and think about, oh, whether or not I could do it, right? And that becomes the basis of the conversations about tiny homes, is all these people thinking, oh, could you do it? No, no, I couldn't do it. I can. And it's like, that's not the question. The question is not, can you do it? Who cares? I don't care if you don't want to do it. Why can't other people have that option if they can do it and they're willing to make that start? So it's, so to me, the inspiration kind of came from, number one, the success of my own experience with it, and then the frustration of saying, hey, we got so many of these large kind of societal crises that are taking place, from climate change to energy crises to the housing affordability crisis to homelessness, right? It's like, if this one tool had the ability to allow me to kind of limit my own carbon emissions, also move into a much more sustainable and affordable structure that was healthy and safe and appropriate for my needs at the time. Like, how is it that we're so living in a society that doesn't see other people's freedoms to have self-determination of their space as important? And how far does it have to go before we realize that there needs to be a big shift?
Yeah, I don't think I have anything to add. I'm with you. You know, I find that everybody I meet has a different reason for going tiny. I mean, there's a lot of similar reasons as well. But, you know, some people have unique reasons, like non-toxic homes. They have allergies. Or I recently did a story on somebody who had toxic mold exposure in her apartment and then had to move into a self-built tiny house that was specific to her illness and how that completely changed her life. She went from being, you know, bedridden to a singer in Nashville. You know, I think that there are so many different benefits that a tiny house can provide at an affordable, in an affordable way. And so, yeah, I hope that there's more opportunities for people to find ways to do it in the future.
Help to enable some happiness. I mean, mm-hmm. like, right, what we're really talking about is this freedom that it can provide. And that might be a financial freedom. It might be an actual like freedom of mobility. It might be a freedom from toxic mold exposure. But that freedom that then open, and what will you do with that? And that's, who knows, right? To Zach's point, I don't care. What you want to do with it may not be the same as me, but the fact that you can do that and you create this space in your life to follow a passion, whether it's skiing in Zach's case or filmmaking in your case or being on television in my case, I don't know. You know, it's just, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
What I'd like to do is I'd like to talk about where the tiny house movement is now. We've kind of circled it a little bit. We've talked about the very beginnings and there has been quite a lot of movement. The, you know, not the least of which is it's in the vernacular. You know, just you say tiny house, everybody knows what that is now, where that wasn't the case back in 2014. There have been improvements in terms of the legality of it, and that's stuff that Zach's worked on personally. I'm curious from where you sit, someone that is very much entrenched in this world, that is talking to lots of people, that is inspiring a lot of people, Where is the tiny house movement now, and where might it be headed?
So what I'm seeing as far as, like, you know, legality and moving forward, that's been interesting in the last few years are these tiny house villages that are popping up in communities. They're getting, you know, more and more popular. And those are real places where people can live legally in a tiny home and in a community. So they're not everywhere, though. Like, it's very hard to find one in Washington. The ones that I recently visited were in North Carolina and Tennessee, and they have hundreds of tiny house spaces available and hundreds of people living there in a wait list that goes on and on and on. And so I think that that's a really interesting new thing that I've seen come up. But I also see a lot of people are still living under the radar, either on their own private property or on somebody else's private property where they're paying a rent fee. And then there's the small amount of people who are mobile with their tiny homes. You know, most people who are mobile aren't living in a tiny home. They're living in a van or a bus or a camper. There are some people that are still mobile, which, you know, you can do legally as long as you're moving all the time and you have some sort of permanent address that you can assign to somewhere. But yeah, I see the tiny house communities creating a real option for people. And I think that there's a need for more and more of them.
These tiny home communities is something that I've been very involved with, and there's different types of tiny home communities, obviously, but through Operation Tiny Home and the nonprofit work, we've almost specifically focused on supporting tiny home communities. And when I say tiny home communities, I think for the listeners, a lot of people might think, okay, the kind of structures that you see, kind of like these very basic, kind of tough shed, you know, electrified, insulated, tough shed communities for homeless people. But that's not what you're talking about. Right. You're talking about a tiny home like yours that has, you know, all the amenities of a normal home, just, you know, on a trailer that is actually being kind of, you know, a fully functioning house. So can you talk about that in terms of just like the confusion that a lot of people have when you say tiny home and like having to kind of backtrack every time and kind of break it down again?
Yeah.
Is that frustrating to you?
Yeah, it is. I hope I can say this in a eloquent way because...
Nah, just let it rip.
We'll see. So I think that there's a lot of confusion, especially in Seattle, which is where I'm at, because there are a bunch of tiny house villages here. And when you say tiny house village to anybody, they know or think about what you were talking about, Zach, the electrified sheds for homeless people only, you know, people who really need them. Now, I think that those places are needed. Don't get me wrong. I think that they're absolutely needed. I just think that as far as like a marketing or branding standpoint, it's difficult to call them tiny homes because they are meant as temporary structures. And so it is hard. You have to sometimes, depending on who you're talking to, when you're talking about a tiny house community that is basically a place for you to live in it, even a $100,000 tiny home that has water, power, sewer, everything that a normal home would, and you pay like an HOA fee to live there. And so really a middle class neighborhood, it's different than a tiny house village that you're talking about for people in need. And so I almost wish we could call them micro shelters versus tiny homes or something else completely, just for a marketing and branding standpoint.
I'm on board you on that. Anybody listening, can we just as a movement decide that it's really important just for the communication and to alleviate confusion about what it is that you're talking about when you're talking about legalizing tiny homes, we need a separate name for that. That's my conclusion. And I'm glad to hear that you're backing me up on this.
Yeah.
I feel like the tiny home villages, they're really amazing, but they tend to absorb the mass majority of kind of the media exposure and kind of the news stories about tiny homes. And then we can't ever get other to this other type of home that we're trying to get attention to.
It's making it very difficult, I think, for the tiny house people who have, you know, normal, like, tiny homes that have all of the different amenities and functions in it to find legal standpoint and classification and jurisdiction in certain areas. Because if you say tiny home in Seattle, you are thinking homeless shelter. And that is, you know, we need a middle ground. You can't go from a homeless shelter shed to $1 million home. There is a middle ground there, especially in Seattle, one of the most expensive markets. And so there's no way we're ever going to get a tiny house community here if we continue to call those structures, tiny homes. You know, I'll give an example that really irritated me recently is I'm friends with the owner of Seattle Tiny Homes, and he builds, you know, $100,000 tiny homes or $50,000 tiny homes, you know, not tough sheds that are electrified. And he says he gets 50 calls a week from people looking for homeless shelter tiny homes. So his majority of his time is when he's getting these phone calls, is fielding phone calls for something that's completely different. And it's simply, like you said, a classification and a communication issue. Because when you Google Seattle tiny homes, his number comes up. And if you're looking for the homeless shelter, he's getting calls, and he's gotten to the point where he literally has it on his voicemail. If you're looking for, you know, a homeless community, then here's the number. Here's some information. I'll give you the information. You know, he wants to support that movement as well, finding homes for people in need, but it's a different classification. Anyway, I'm going on a tangent now, but you got me started.
I got a question, though. I got a question for you, and I really want to know your opinion on this. What's the solution, right? Should we, as a movement, kind of say, all right, well, if we need some new, should we kind of backtrack and say, okay, you can have tiny houses. Tiny houses can be the shelter form. And then we come out with a new version of a new kind of name for the type of product that we're trying to talk about.
I don't think so.
Should we give up on that?
No, because the problem isn't with the word tiny, it's with the word home. Because those structures, a home to me is something you can permanently live in. Those structures are meant for temporary housing. They're a bed and a lamp, you know. You can't go to the bathroom in them, you can't cook in them. So those aren't homes. They're shelters, and that's to me what they are. And maybe to people who are really in need, it feels like a home, and we're giving them the classification of that so that they can feel like they have a space. And I understand that mentality, why it's important. But I also feel like we need to find a way to find some sort of a classification difference so that both sets of the people in need and the people in the next set up that need affordable housing that aren't necessarily homeless also get to a point where they can live legally and permanently in these types of, you know, dwellings. So we just need to find some solution there. And I don't know how to do it. I don't have an answer for you, but I do recognize that it's a problem.
If only we knew a filmmaker, a couple of television hosts, and someone that's good at getting the word out. It feels like we could create another medium to balance out all the news coverage and show another type of tiny living structure. But where are we going to find that? So
we're trying.
I guess we're out of luck. Yeah, I know. No kidding. No kidding. Jenna, we've had you here for almost an hour. I think that was a really good spot to end on. And I do think that it is interesting what your journey has been, what the journey of the tiny house movement has been. And it is, you know, like all of our journeys, it's never ending, right? It's always going to be changing. And I think it is interesting. You know, we hadn't talked about that before, Zach, this idea of that, of tiny homes or tiny shelters being kind of called tiny homes, and that sort of obscuring what maybe an actual or a different type of house is. And I think that's interesting.
Well, it's exactly what I was kind of what Jenna was mentioning, is that same thing that I run into, is that I don't want to demote anybody's experience in the home that they're at, right? And having that title tiny house or tiny home, it makes people feel good about where they're at, right? And so I don't want to, yeah, it's like, I don't know. Do we
I know.
Try to tell people that they're living in a tiny shelter, or you know, do we let them have it? And like, we kind of move on from our, call our shit tiny mansions. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you make a good point, and I definitely don't want to seem insensitive, because I do feel like the emotion around the word home is important. But I think for a classification legality purposes, it's problematic as well. And so I see both sides of the coin there, and I definitely see the need for both types. And so I just wish there was a way forward for both, you know.
I think, to be clear, what we are talking about is language. We're not talking about whether one is good or one is bad. They are all, I mean, one of the things that we would always run into is someone goes, oh, I couldn't live in a tiny house because I can't sleep in a loft. Like, people have this idea that a tiny house is one thing, when a tiny house is almost an infinite amount of things, right? But the problem is we just haven't gotten descriptive enough in our language. So we're not talking about one is good, one is bad. We're just talking about how do we describe it so that we are accurately communicating to someone what we are talking about. That's what I think the conversation really was about.
I like to put it as that they're rungs on a ladder. You know, they're all the different types of homes. They're just different housing types, but they're all needed in order to create a healthy housing ecosystem where you're able to kind of move up and down the spectrum depending on your capacity, your financial capacity, as well as your need. And so one of the things that is insane to me is that Washington State actually has a legal definition between a tiny home and a tiny house, right? And so a tiny house is a fully legal tiny house and a tiny home, or it might be the other way around. I don't care. It's so confusing that I just don't like it. But Washington State basically tried to call a shelter a tiny home and a house a tiny house, or it might be the other way around, and it makes no sense to me. But
wow, that wasn't confusing at all. So I think that we've really got our communication down.
I live here.
Nailed it.
I live here and I'm confused. So yeah, I hear you.
Well, Jenna, listen, it was so great to get to meet you, to have this conversation. I can't believe that I wish we would have like crossed paths years ago and that you would have been on our show instead of on your own show. But I'm glad that you had that as well. This was super enjoyable. I really appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Yeah, it was really nice to catch up. Thanks for having me.
Awesome.
Thank you, Jenna.
Jenna Clausel, Tiny House, Giant Journey. That's where you can find her. If you're interested in these films she's been making, as she says, hundreds of tiny houses she's been in, check it out. Her blog is incredible. I have it up here. The YouTube channel, Instagram, it's all there. Jenna, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
I mean, I don't want to say new best friend, but maybe a new best friend. I mean, I really enjoyed that. She was great.
Well, I told you because, I mean, that's what's so much fun about people who kind of got into the tiny home movement a little bit earlier on is kind of having kind of witnessed the transition over the years and just like so much to comment on, you know, because there's just been so much there.
Yeah, great perspective and a storyteller. I love her content's good. I do. Listen, if you guys are interested at all in that, I would check out her content. It's really cool. She's so nice. Tiny House, Giant Journey. Jenna Clausel, rhymes with Hazel. Fun episode. Fun episode.
Yeah, that was great. How are we going to top it? We're going to have to get Jay Schaefer or something.
Easy. Dad, we're just going to keep getting better. Just keep talking to interesting people and having some fun and telling their tales, their tiny house tales. See what I did there? Brought it back to the title of our podcast.
You're a genius. I don't tell you this enough, but yeah, John, everybody give a clap. Round of applause. John made the connection. You should be a producer. Oh, you are. Forgot about it.
Two claps and a cheer, Zach. I can't believe you didn't do that.
That's right. Okay. Two claps and a cheer for John. Actually, let's do this for real. Two claps and a cheer for Jenna. Ready? Hey!
Jenna!
Jenna!
If you're ever on the crew of Tiny House Nation, you're going to get that. Everyone else, sorry, over your head. All right, buddy. I'll see you next time.
Love it. Take care, John.